Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti and I thank you for joining us. With me in the studio today, I'm absolutely delighted because finding time in her busy schedule some 24 hours after appearing on Sunday Supplement, it's Allison Rudd. Did you enjoy Sunday Supplement?
Always enjoy it, yeah.
With the excellent Patty Barkley. And
we made history because it was the first time that been a guest missing from the starting line.
Yeah. Ooh, who was it?
Ollie Holt, wasn't
Ollie it? Holt got stuck in snowdrifts.
Wow. So for those who don't know, Patty Barkley lives in a very posh part of West London, very close to the Sky Studios. So they drafted in.
Yeah.
Right?
Emergency phone call. Very exciting.
And also joining me in the studio, it's the excellent Julian Lawrence. Now, later on, we're going to be debating the backlash to the new TV deal. Backlash? Is there a backlash? Is there a new TV deal? No, there isn't. There's just a bunch of proposals. But it will change the way many of us see Premier League football and maybe a little bit of the Champions League draw as well. But there's only one place to start, and that's at Old Trafford and the Manchester Derby. Allison, before we actually get into the match itself, before the game, everybody was speculating on how Mourinho would approach this. Obviously, no Paul Pogba, no Eric Bailly. Phil Jones apparently fit enough to be on the bench. And people were like, is he going to erect some massive Mourinho wall? And is he going to be dire and negative? And then you see the lineup and you see, oh, look, he went four at the back. He's got, okay, Lingard in for Pogba, which might not be the most exciting thing in the world, but, you know, it's a 4-3-3. But just because you have more attacking players doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be more attacking. Was his intent to go and try to be more attacking and City just kept the ball forever? Was that the idea? Or do you think actually the first half or the first 40 minutes until the goal unfolded the way Mourinho planned?
No, I don't think he was planning on doing something remarkably attacking at all, because from the word go, the Man United team was set up to stifle and contain and be scrappy and disrupt City's rhythm. So in a sense, he could have picked anyone from his squad and he would have given them the same instructions, I think. And even if Pogba had been fit, I very much doubt it would have been a different... it just might have happened more effectively. The game was unpleasant to watch, I found. I thought it was scrappy and bitty and a little bit nasty and ugly. Yeah, that's... but some derbies can be fun in those respects. This wasn't. United tried to stifle City's most creative players, and in response, and this was the most interesting aspect of the match, I thought, City responded in kind, and they thought, well, if you're going to stifle us, we'll just harass you. And they meddled with their formation, dizzied United. Didn't score beautiful goals, scored goals that really capitalised on United errors and, as you say, typical derby perhaps. But, I mean, they did not play beautifully. They were just probably more energetic and better at pouncing on errors than United were.
Do you agree with that assessment?
No, I thought City were amazing, I have to say.
And,
I really enjoyed
it. In what way amazing?
Amazing in the fact that United tried to stop them playing and they couldn't get near them. They couldn't catch them. They couldn't get near them. They got a bit aggressive, like you said, but even that didn't disturb them. The movement of the players off the ball, so Gabriel Jesus could go on the left, he could go in the centre. David Silva played as a false number nine for half of the first half. They just couldn't cope with with them and with all the movement on the ball, off the ball, I thought it was just, it's one of the most dominant first half I've seen in a long time in those kind of games. And I think Mourinho trying to man mark the three in midfield, Fernandinho with Lingard on Fernandinho, and then Herrera and Matic on De Bruyne and Silva, I think was the wrong idea. I think it's even better for Mourinho that Pep changed quite quickly and like you put it nicely, dizzied United by changing a few things early on in the game. Because I think trying to man mark those three is completely stupid. And if you look at the teams who caused problems to this City team, Shakhtar, especially in the first game of their Champions League two encounters, there was no man-marking. Napoli, there was no man-marking either. And they created a lot of problems by keeping the ball more than United did.
Yeah, when they won the ball rather than... I mean, this is the fundamental... I mean, to me, I think this is the fundamental thing is when you're playing City, how do you react? What Shakhtar and Napoli did was they would win the ball back and try to pass through City and effectively tire them out and so on. And it was effective, whereas United decided to go long and be direct to Lukaku. But you got to play with the guys you have. I mean, Shakhtar and Napoli have ball-playing defenders and midfielders who can do that. They don't have a big, strong, fast, mobile for his size center forward like Romelu Lukaku. So I mean, it was not necessarily a bad thing for Mourinho to be direct. Now, they didn't execute it well, I'll grant you that, but... Do you know what I mean? Because I heard Gary Neville say, like, well, they need to string four or five passes together and play out from the back and let the team, you know, move up the pitch and hold the ball and all this stuff. But, and I agreed with him. It does make a big difference when I don't have Eric Bailly back there. Who can pass out of the back? How are you going to pass the ball out of the back with Matic, Herrera and Lingard?
Even if you could have added 10% more class to all the players that Man United had available, City were closing down and making them jittery all the time. The reason Gary Neville gets cross is there's something fundamentally embarrassing about it being Manchester United at Old Trafford, and their main problem is simply how do we contain City, and it's not about United imposing any sense of their own characteristic or personality or style on the game. It was all the narrative beforehand, and everything about the match itself was about how on earth are Man United going to cope with City. And they almost coped quite well. If that last chance Lukaku had should have gone in, shouldn't it? It should have gone in. It wasn't even a save. It just hit his face. So...
But then De Gea had a great save as well.
And that would have been considered... That would have been considered a triumph. He did not want City to go to Old Trafford and play those superb, free-flowing, beautiful football where everyone's gushing, and they play it from the back. No United player gets near the ball. They are outpassed, outthought, and there's a beautiful De Bruyne finish at the end of it. And he achieved that. They did not do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think almost he can swallow the defeat because there was none of that particular humiliation. Mourinho will wake up and he will think, that was a typical derby. It was a bit ugly at times. We were unlucky that we didn't get the 2-2 with a Lukaku shot. We were not humiliated. We were not made to look like the ignorant, tactically naive younger brother on Manchester. It was about making the game as ugly as possible in the hope that in the sort of randomness of ugly football, you get a draw.
No, I agree. I just thought they could have used the ball better, that's all.
One other quick Pep thing about how this guy really doesn't care. You're playing with house money, you're undefeated, whatever. Aguero doesn't even come on. Remember last year when he left Aguero out against Barcelona and he says, we need one to control the midfield, and he got pilloried for it? This is kind of odd, isn't it?
It's a game you have to work hard. He doesn't work hard enough.
I know, but the way we reflectively say, like, well, look, you know, he's one of the best center forwards in the world and blah, 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 and they could just leave him out in a game like this. It's still...
But I think Pep had prepared us for that because he's been saying, hasn't he, that Aguero has not been the same since he was involved in that car accident, and he's not quite at peak fitness. So you could argue he was taking the derby very seriously by not risking a player that's not quite there yet.
Now let's enter Mourinho world. So after the game, he made such a big fuss about Ander Herrera and Nicolas Otamendi. The two came together in the box. Herrera went down. Mourinho thought that was 100% Stonewall penalty. Actually, I don't even want to say Mourinho thought. I'm just going to say Mourinho said. Because I think let's try to get into the guy's head and what he's actually really thinking, the better. Does he have a point, Alisson, our qualified referee?
Well, no, it wasn't a penalty. So,
but Herrera went down. And Mourinho said it was a penalty.
I think you'd be hard-pressed to find, out of 100 referees, more than two that might say it was a penalty, don't you think? Yes, at the time, from a certain angle, it looked like it might be. But from most angles and on replays, it's not. There's a foot there and the player thinks, ooh, I can fall over.
Could he have tried to stay on his feet, Julian?
Yeah, I think so. 100%. I don't think the body's even too far behind after that poor first touch by Otamendi. And he gets the ball back, Herrera.
So you think he said, like, all right. Because I think Otamendi, I would imagine what happened, Otamendi was surprised by his poor first touch. Yeah, yeah. And Herrera's in a split second, and if Side were here, he'd tell us about how is the brain synapses firing and whatever. He said, all right, he's going to come in,
yeah,
and he's going, and he's going to clobber me.
100%.
And then Otamendi just pulls out just enough. Hindsight 2020, he could have stayed on his feet, yeah, right? And he could have maybe even had a shot on goal.
If his mind works in, I've got the ball back in the box. Yeah, yeah, I've got the ball back here. I'm in. Instead of thinking he's going to come for me, which most people would probably think as well. Any of us, whatever level you're playing with your mate, you think, oh, he's going to club me.
Well, you would think so, because especially after a mistake. You know, your first instinct is like, get the ball away.
Especially
in
that area.
Yeah, in that area. Yeah.
You would go for it.
All right, so Mourinho's just wrong and making excuses, yeah? Is that what you're saying, Alisson?
I don't know why he says it. He may believe it. It may be when you're the manager of Manchester United, you do see things through a prism that way.
Right. What about Mourinho's point about City being protected, blah, blah, blah? Yeah, this is just all stuff we've seen before. It doesn't really matter, yeah?
The gods of football, he says.
Gods of football. All right, the tunnel incident. Now, I'm only going to go by what our excellent Paul Hurst and others have reported. By the way, again, I'm going to reveal how the sausage is made here. Okay, so Paul Hurst was not actually in the tunnel to witness all this. Neither was any other reporter, okay? So what happens is this incident occurs, and then press people from both clubs go and get on the phone with reporters, and they give their version of events, and reporters have to kind of decide who's kind of slightly being Pinocchio, who's not being Pinocchio. If they have relationships with members of staff or players, they may get some more information, and that helps form a narrative. And that's why if you read the piece, there's so much uncertainty about what actually happened. Now, I'm going to piece together as best I can. Please correct me if you have information, because I have not read every single daily newspaper, because there's some daily newspapers in this country I don't like to read. But as I understand it, the door to the City dressing room was open, and they were playing loud music and celebrating boisterously, at which point Jose Mourinho may have approached the door and said something, which Ederson did not take well. Ederson, who was standing in the doorway for some reason, because I suppose
he's guarding the door.
He looks more like a bouncer than most than most City players. Things got heated. There was an exchange. A bunch of people got involved. And there was some sort of melee. Arteta was seen with blood on his face. Mikel Arteta, who, of course, is an assistant to Pep. Somebody threw a milk carton, which may or may not have hit Jose Mourinho. Certainly, much was made of the fact that Mourinho actually afterwards went and faced the cameras. And there was no sign of the offending milk at that point, which, you know, I'm kind of thinking to myself, gee, might Mourinho keep more than one jacket at Old Trafford, possibly? I don't know. I'm assuming the FA will investigate this, right? Because by all accounts, this was much worse than Pizzagate. There's also a report that Mourinho used an expletive and shouted something very... I mean, he was arguing with Ederson in Portuguese. And again, this is what's being reported in the newspapers. And then all of a sudden he switches to English to say very loudly, like, you will, obscenity, show respect, something like that. And again, and maybe I'm spending too much time analyzing Mourinho's mind, but I'm wondering if something like that kind of makes a statement. It's almost like a, you know, all of a sudden you blurt it out in English so loudly, and then you know that whoever might not have known there was something going on comes over. And then, you know, Lukaku comes over, who's bigger than, again, the entire City team. I'm bigger than Ederson too. And then it kicks off. It can be a way to galvanize your team, right? After a defeat and maybe create the siege mentality we hear about or whatever.
Well, that's a good point, actually. I hadn't thought of it that way. But doesn't anyone think it was slightly lacking in class for City to do the celebrations they were doing? They already have the biggest entourage I've ever seen a football club have, and they were all there at Old Trafford. So you've got the celebrations in front of the crowd by City, which doesn't fit well with what they then say afterwards, which is that, you know, it's a long way to go and we're not we haven't won the title yet, and the players are all saying that. I mean,
Pep did not go over, incidentally.
But you wanted all his staff, like 20 of them, to go over, but not him. Because you see him saying to the staff, you go, and they say, yeah, but you go too. And he said, no, I'm not going.
Yeah,
and he goes back
to
the tunnel.
It's not, I mean, it's billed as a cup final, this match, but it's not a cup final. And the classy response is to remember that it's not a cup final.
And then you play
loud music. It's not your dressing room.
When Juve go to Napoli and win 2 weeks ago, I don't think they play loud music and they wind them up City wind up United. And I know it's not a derby, but I'm not sure they do that in a derby against Inter
same level of rivalry. And
no,
and,
maybe
and
not.
It's not Pep versus Mourinho. I don't know.
I just thought maybe it was a bit over the top to celebrate the way they did and everything. And
as a neutral, and as a big wrestling fan, I like the semantics. I don't have an issue for it. I don't find it sinister. I don't necessarily see it as a lack of class, because I go back to this, remember who you're dealing with on the other hand. You're dealing with Jose Mourinho, you're dealing with Ander Herrera. And I'm sorry, you know, do you remember Herrera last year against the tactical fouling against Chelsea?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, at some point, I don't have a problem. You want to live by those rules, fine, but then you die by those rules. And you accept the fact that somebody's going to go and rub your face in it. You didn't do it on the pitch in front of everybody. So they're playing loud music.
True, but
so
you can
what?
See why. Jose
Use that as a spur to think it. About how you can be better. They have a bigger lead than PSG and Bayern even.
I know.
I mean, that's...
They will lose one or two games, but yeah, it's over.
Now, this season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League, the Champions League, the Europa League, and the FA Cup as well. Alison, what was your favourite goal of the weekend in the Premier League?
I was at Wembley to see Spurs again play a bit sluggishly to start with, but thanks to their South Korean international Sonny, as Pochettino calls him, who played in a sunny way, and he lifted that team and he just made them remember that they are a good team, and he scored and deserved to score. It was a through ball from Dele Alli, which was the only nice thing that Dele Alli did on the day, really, because he had a bit of a cold, wasn't feeling great. And Son ran onto it, and he only had about 12 inches to aim at, and he got the ball through, and neat finish, lovely run. I like the goal because it epitomised his performance on the day. He was man of the match and a joy to watch.
Julien?
I went for Jermaine Defoe's second goal.
Yeah, so did I.
Which was by far better than Son's and any other goal this weekend. It's just an amazing piece of skill from Defoe. It's just before halftime. There's a long ball and he runs in behind and in a really tight angle, just manages with the inside of his foot as well after the ball had bounced to put it over the keeper in the opposite top corner. It's beautiful. I heard someone saying he was like Marco van Basten in the 80s.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
not. Come not on. Come on. It's not as good
it's
as
like
van
Dennis
Basten.
Bergkamp either.
No.
But it was
it's a good one.
Yeah. The Merseyside Derby. Okay, I'm going to start with the end, if you will, with a little incident, because last night I was doing the show on ESPN FC, and we had Stevie Nicol on the penalty, which Liverpool, of course, had taken the lead. They battered Everton, and then there's a turning point in the game. Long ball from Wayne Rooney to Calvert-Lewin. Coming together with Lovren, Calvert-Lewin goes down, penalty, and no doubt we'll be talking about this some more. But to me, that was not a penalty. That was soft, but to the point that it's not a penalty. Steve Nicol said, surprisingly for a Liverpool fan, it was definitely a penalty because Lovren's a fool and a bad defender, essentially, because Lovren did everything wrong. Alison, I think I'm giving anything away here. You do have some Liverpool allegiance. We all agreed Lovren was silly, yes?
Yes.
But was that a penalty?
Yes. It's one of those horrible technical things. It's a penalty, and it feels morally it shouldn't have been a penalty because you kind of hope that Calvert-Lewin would have stayed on his feet. But he was pushed, and if you're pushed in the box, it's a penalty.
If that's a pen, though, we have five or six every single game.
Also, was he pushed or did... or because the way it looked to me like Calvert-Lewin comes across him, which you're supposed to do, and runs into Lovren as much as Lovren runs into him. And the fact that Lovren's hand is up...
His hand is up and he pushes him.
I'm right. I don't see the hand going forward.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't see the arm going forward.
I don't see that at all.
The left hand is a bit in a weird position. But
I see Lewin coming across, running into Lovren, who's going in the opposite direction. Lovren's obviously bigger and heavier. And then Calvert-Lewin making sure he throws himself to the ground. And I kind of think that were this not a yeoman, hard-working, young, fine English player, we would be having a serious conversation about cheating to win a penalty. Maybe Calvert-Lewin did the right thing because he gave the referee a decision to make, and the guy was far behind, and maybe he saw the angle, and maybe from that perspective it's a penalty. But let's not forget, I don't want to hear ever again, it's creeping into our game, our strikers are too honest, all this nonsense, which should have gone out the window with Franny Lee 50 years ago, but too many people here don't seem to know their own history. Calvert-Lewin was savvy, yes?
Very savvy, yeah. But he didn't ask Lovren to touch him.
How could Lovren? How could Lovren not have touched him? By the way,
he didn't have to.
Oh, really?
Well, because you're a defender.
What does Lovren do?
You're
teleport?
A central defender who will be in those situations a lot, and you will train a lot for how to handle those situations. Putting your hand on the back of the striker is not what you do, because you risk giving away a penalty.
I think also the pace that Calvert-Lewin is going, you could be unbalanced pretty easily.
It takes very little to fall over.
Which is true at that pace, really.
Whatever, we'll have to agree to disagree on this one. Jurgen Klopp agrees with me, funnily enough. Extraordinary, go watch it, it's on every kind of social media. Extraordinary post-match interview with the guy from Sky. Is it Pat Davidson, is that his name? Name-check this guy. Anyway, with Klopp, I find it weird because he's always kind of like half being sarcastic and half smiling, and you kind of don't quite know what's going on in his head. But I thought this was really extraordinary, and he really got annoyed to the point that he said something I really didn't like. He says, "Well, I'm sorry, then we can't continue this interview because I can only speak to people who know a little bit about football." And then, to his credit, the Sky guy said, "Well, there's a bunch of guys in the studio who've played football very well for a very long time, who actually think it was a penalty." And then Klopp kind of goes and says, "All right, well then I'm wrong because everybody else is saying the opposite of me, so then I must be wrong," which again is heat of the moment, whatever, but not his finest hour. Yeah,
no, not his finest hour. And there's this, it's creeping into the game now that
with the diving and cheating by foreigners,
that managers are bringing morality and aesthetics into the refereeing decisions. Is Klopp actually saying that because Liverpool were the only team who were attacking, because Liverpool were the better team, because on most other days that would have unfolded as a clear Liverpool win, that the referee had a duty not to award a penalty and make the result
That's
unfair?
That's a really good point you're making. Carry on.
There is now this prism of we deserve something. And not just talking about the penalty, everything that Klopp said about the match was about the morality of the negative tactics versus positive tactics. Whereas that's incredibly naive, because if you are the better team, what do you expect the opposition to do? We've just had this long debate about what United acting as the underdog, and that's slightly embarrassing when you're at Old Trafford and you're Manchester United. But Everton have had a change of manager, and Big Sam has explained he's going to have to apply strict tactical rules to this match to get anything out of it at all. And then Klopp, A, acts surprised that they are defensive, and B, acts as if there is this divine right to win a game where you are the more attractive team. that's not football, Jürgen. Sorry.
I think Alison's right in the sense that I don't think simply because you have worse players, you have to play bad defensive football. And I think bad defensive football doesn't work. And yeah, I'll tell you, and look, evidence of this is the fact that if Lovren defends like a normal person, Everton go and lose that game. And if Mane passes the ball, they go 2-0 down and then they got to come forward and they could have lost this 5 or 6-0. So I don't, if I'm Allardyce, I don't go around taking credit for the draw because I say, wow, we got really, really battered. Not because we were defensive. You can be defensive and never concede a shot. That's being good defensive and negative. But they were defensive and they conceded loads of opportunities to a better team. But by the same token, Alisson's kind of right, though, right? I mean, the whole beauty of football is that we can kind of interpret it any way we want. And if you want to play the way Sam Allardyce did, if you think it's what's right for your team, you're entitled to do it. And it doesn't mean that it should influence a referee's decision at the end of the game.
Yeah, no, that was silly from Klopp. But Sam got lucky on this one. And Everton got lucky on this one.
Another Klopp-tastic point. The six changes. He leaves Coutinho and Firmino on the bench. He starts Dominic Solanke, who I think was making his first ever start at Anfield and who has not scored in top-flight football yet, I believe. You could also look at this as me saying, wow, you disrespected the Merseyside derby by playing these guys. But Klopp would say, the guys I sent out there deserve to win. They created chances. We could have easily won that game with the team I had out there, and that's a long season. And I don't need Coutinho and Firmino to beat this bunch of Muppets. Right?
Well,
and he's right.
Yeah, no, he is right. There was nothing wrong.
So there's nothing wrong with the six
changes. Nothing wrong with the lineup. Klopp has rotated more than any other manager this season. So he's being consistent. Any idea that he's disrespecting the Merseyside derby, you could maybe bring that into the conversation if this was the first time he made more than one change. But this isn't. This is what he's doing at the moment. This is how he's keeping Liverpool fresh because they play a high-intensity game and he needs to rotate his players. And they played well. Nobody, when they looked at the lineup, said, ooh, why is Lovren playing? And Lovren's the only... Well, Lovren and Mane were the two players who made two very bad mistakes, but no one said they shouldn't have been playing. There was a false logic there to say the lineup was incorrect. Liverpool, in every way a manager can arrange it, did everything right to win that game. You can't legislate for your centre-back giving away a penalty. You can't legislate for Mane not passing the ball when there were three players queuing up to score. What was significant, I thought, about that Mane chance, which he created beautifully in a Mane-esque way, was when he missed, and it was a bad miss, he laughed. He looked amused. Because it was such a one-sided game. He didn't think it was going to be a significant miss. He thought, well, we'll have another 20 of those. It was that kind of game, and it was that kind of freak result.
I found this strange when I saw the lineups. Why would you not play two of your best players, if not your two best players in it? Then I thought about it. I said, OK, Firmino is not number nine. No. So you think, because they're going to play two lines of four and there'll be no space, they'll be super deep, they're going to have nine men in their box, there's no point playing him because, you know, he won't be able to express himself the way he usually does. So you put Solanke, who's more of a, you know, of a unit, maybe more suited for that kind of opposition. Okay. And then Coutinho, I was still surprised. Where I think the biggest mistakes of Klopp was yesterday was to wait until Rooney scored that penalty to bring Coutinho on. Because the game at 1-0 up, the game is there for the taking. They're controlling it so well. They're just in the second goal. That's all they need. And Everton are going deeper and deeper and deeper and there's less and less and less spaces. And you think, okay, who on my bench right now could unlock this defence? It's Coutinho. Whether it's a long shot range, whether it's, you know, some trickery, whatever. And why do you wait?
She would have brought him on sooner.
Yeah. You put Firmino on after 67 minutes, right? And you leave Coutinho on the bench. And it's only when Rooney's going to say, oh, sugar, now we're going to drop 2 points. Okay, Philip, come in and try to sort this mess out because I've messed it up big time.
If you're going to give a manager anything to do, it's surely assessing training, assessing who's fit, who isn't fit, who's clicking, who is clicking, and making sure, you know, maybe Coutinho, because of all the stuff about Barcelona being raised again,
maybe
he was in a bit of a sulk. Maybe he felt he'd be better off not playing the full match.
Final word on Everton. I feel like, because Big Sam is such an easy narrative, you know, and he came out and he reinforced it himself when he said, well, you know, we came in, we'd given up a million goals and, you know, it is kind of playing out that way. What I'm skeptical about is it's not like he's got a team packed with defensive midfielders and whatnot. Is it just a question of him hunkering down until January and then making the necessary changes? Or actually, given Everton are mid-table, is this fine? Do you just have them like steer the ship until the summer and then see where you are? They're not going to go down.
They're not going to go down. And I think that's a good question, because what Allardyce doesn't want to be this bloke who's only ever solving problems. He wants to build and prove he can be a creatively interesting coach that can win things, not just escape bad things. And he does have players in that team that can do nice things. I get it. The Merseyside derby came at the wrong point in some respects. He hasn't had time to really work out what he can do with the team. But from now he's got his point out of that match. It would be nice to see Allardyce doing something creative. I don't just mean they play creatively. I mean, I want to see him thinking creatively about how he utilises that team. I mean, it was a bit wacky to play Rooney and Sigurdsson as wingers. I mean, they were playing wide. I mean, that was bizarre, but interesting. I mean, I would hope that he would be able to push Everton on and on incrementally, tactically interesting, so that come the summer, Everton are happy to give him money and think maybe this is a manager who can eventually get us Champions League football.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Premier League television rights for the next three-year cycle are up, and they announce what the different packages are, and it's going to be more than half Premier League games will be televised. And from what I can tell, in terms of the way the packages are, there will be football on Saturday evenings. And on certain midweek rounds or bank holiday rounds, every single game will be on television. Does this matter? Is this clever? And the reason I go back to this is I've lived in this country a long time, and I'm always sort of fascinated a little bit by your foibles. I'm old enough to remember when ITV had the rights to Match of the Day, and they decided to rather than putting it on at 10 o'clock, they said, hey, look, children like football too. Why don't we go and put it in prime time? And everybody freaked out because there's all these traditional shows that you people like to watch on television. And this is a long time ago, though. Do people even watch television anymore other than live games? And if that's the case, why not put football on Saturday night? I mean, do you think there's going to be this level of debate about it, about the changing to the great British habits? Or
I don't think there's I'm not bothered about whether this affects a program like Strictly Come Dancing or ITV are going to have Dancing on Ice back again. I don't think it matters. And you know, last night was the final of I'm a Celebrity, and they had 9 million people voting on that. I just don't think those sorts of shows are under threat from anything. But you're right. We are changing the way we watch things. And I'm scared that we're going to become a world where the next generation of football fans only watch it on their tablets and don't even think about going. And if nobody goes to a football match, there's no point watching a football match.
Why wouldn't you go on Saturday evening? What's the problem with a Saturday evening kickoff, do you think?
Well, it clashes with Barcelona and Real Madrid for a start, but sorry.
No, because it's easier to watch it on your tablet.
But then it's easier at 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon and 12:30 on a Saturday.
Yes, but you can't watch it on the telly at 3 o'clock. And there are still families where the parents think, it's 3 o'clock on a Saturday. That's earmarked as going to watch football. Because there's no school. There's no school. Even those kids who have to go to school on Saturdays only go Saturday mornings. Saturday afternoons are the time you go out to watch sport, whether it's rugby or
But there will still be 3 o'clock kickoff, no?
Yeah, of course.
There's still but the impetus to want to go. I know a whole raft of kids who don't... They used to care a lot. I think I might have tickets for the match. No one cares anymore. There's going to be an imbalance between what you have access to on your phone and your tablet and maybe your television. That's going to become an obsolete thing, isn't it? And this desire to be at the game. Because we're taking for granted the fact that when you tune in and watch these live games, whether they're on a Saturday night or not, yeah, maybe the fact it is a Saturday does matter, because it's the sort of thing you can all sit round together rather than watching it in your bedroom on your own. If you're 9 years old, you will come down and watch it with your family because it's there. It's the new Saturday night viewing. And there's no thought, we'll go and watch that game. It's there. It's just so easy to watch it. But you expect there to be loads of people in the crowd singing songs and to be working out, what's that Christmas jingle they're singing? And, that's really funny. There'll be nobody there.
We should try to make it harder for people to watch football.
At some point it stopped being special that you can watch live football on TV.
Welcome to the rest of the world.
There's so much of it. You're creating a vibe.
In our countries, you can watch every single Ligue 1 match if you want to. If you're a Guingamp fan, every single Guingamp match is on TV.
Well, you shouldn't be allowed to. And
in Italy and in Spain, every single game is televised.
And it's kind of...
Every weekend, every midweek, every game is at a different slot.
Okay, because then she's going to say, but your attendances aren't good in Italy. Okay, then in the Bundesliga, too, they're all televised and they have higher attendances than here. They also have cheaper ticket prices and bigger stadiums. I see where you're coming from. I also kind of feel that the fact of the matter is there's a lot of people who cannot afford to go to football matches, and there's a lot of people who can't go to football matches because they have other family commitments and whatnot. And I think you made a good point about Saturday night. Most people are at home sort of between 7 and 9 or 10 o'clock, most normal people. And that is a time when football becomes accessible to you. This conceit that but you have to go to games. Games change. It's not like back when... I remember in the late 80s, you could pay £5 and you could go watch it wasn't the Premier League back then, football hadn't yet been invented, but you could go and watch a top division game in London. And you can't do that now. For a lot of people, it's simply out of reach. And not to mention the whole idea of going to away games, which, for a lot of people gets expensive and it's difficult and whatever else. And they have childcare and relatives, and a lot of people work weekends.
The Saturday night thing, it's an added disruption. If you're a really keen fan and you want to go to matches, saying to your family, I'm not around Saturday night. I'm not around Saturday night because I'm going to the match. And your family are going to say, Saturday night, we were going to do this or we were going to do that together.
It's basically to increase the TV rights and the money coming from, they had to find another slot. I thought personally
it's also
that maybe
more attractive in some other markets in North and South America. No question about that.
So fair enough. But I still think there's good things about it as well. Having Saturday night games, and Gab and I again grew up with Saturday night evening games, which is great. The Juventus Inter Milan game was on Saturday, which was the biggest game in Italy this weekend, for example, was at prime time Saturday evening. And, for us, it's more in France, it's more the Sunday night. But we used to have Saturday nights as well where, this is the biggest game and the biggest game has to be on prime time at the biggest day of the week, which is the Saturday.
I don't know. I just think here in England, it requires a change of mindset, really.
Of course.
Because what you have in families who like football, I'm thinking about going forward what this means to the way we watch football.
Course.
You're going away to even a home match. You might come home late from if you've attended it. which will affect the knock-on effect of playing Sunday morning football in this country. It's just not part of our tradition.
When you see the change,
I don't like change.
A lot of people look. I think that's more English.
I think that's quite evident. Now, while we were taping this, the Champions League draw came out. Now, I do not know what it is because I specifically asked our producer not to tell us. Julian, however, has been fiddling with his phone.
No. So I promise you, don't know it's on air flight mode, or whatever. So I'm actually going to write down what producer Charlie's.
Okay, so this is what we're going to do. Now, Charlie's going to read me the fixtures, and I will repeat them, and you guys can, like, you know how like an FA Cup third round draw, which is also exciting. You guys all write it down. So, Julian, I will deputize you to write down the fixtures. Okay. So, Charlie, please commence. Juventus versus Tottenham Hotspur.
Ooh. Ooh, that's a good one. Second leg at Wembley. Oh.
Basel versus Manchester City.
My word. If they even start getting luck in the draws, I mean, come on.
Mourinho's right. They are protected.
Come on.
Clearly.
I was hoping PSG for Basel, but Basel for PSG.
FC Porto versus Liverpool.
It's an interesting one. Very good start of the season, Porto.
PSG. Sevilla.
Come on, PSG.
Versus Manchester United.
The gods of football, they're good for Jose as well sometimes.
Exactly. How bad was Sevilla this weekend, my goodness.
Oh my God.
Real Madrid.
No way. No!
Paris Saint-Germain.
Come on,
now or never, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame for them.
It's
they won't do the
trouble.
They won't do the trouble. It's a shame for Real Madrid.
Ooh. Shakhtar Donetsk versus Roma.
That's another good one.
Wait, should it be like the UEFA guy? Versus AS Roma. Chelsea.
Oh, Chelsea-Barca then, no?
Versus Barcelona. FC Bayern München.
Besiktas. That's the one no one is going to watch.
Against Besiktas.
Bayern, the gods of football, they're good with them as well.
Yeah, okay. So the gods of football were basically mean to the two big Spanish teams. And they were good, once again, to the English sides.
Apart from Spurs, yeah.
No. Well, after the game on Saturday, midweek, Danny Rose said that Pochettino would much prefer a tough draw. So I said to him after the game, is Danny Rose right? And why on earth would you want the toughest draw you could have? I'm not saying that is the toughest thing. Well, it's amongst one of the toughest ones they were available to them in the draw. But Pochettino was hilarious. He was going, I'm very brave. I only like playing big teams. But then I said, well, come on. Some detail to that, and he said he sort of admitted if it's a big team they'll get a bigger crowd at Wembley, the crowd will be up for it, they'll give them support from the word go, there'll be no assumption that they're going to win. They've struggled, Spurs, with that sort of vibe at a big stadium, that oh come on, you're supposed to win this easily. And that's why they've been getting draws against the likes of West Brom at Wembley. Tottenham need, the way they are set up now and the way they're coping with Wembley, they need there to be a glamorous side that where they can be sort of half considered the underdog to lift their game.
Real Madrid and Dortmund.
Tell you what,
and the proof is that they top their group with Real Madrid in it.
Tell you what, right now, Juventus aren't playing particularly glamorous football at all. But come February,
No,
I take your point. No question. No question about it.
Real Madrid against PSG. Is
that's
the
tie of the round, yes?
Yeah, I think so.
Followed by Barcelona and Chelsea?
Yeah, and then you...
Lionel Messi hasn't scored 8 games against Chelsea, I'm reliably informed.
Wow.
Good thing they don't have a guy like Luis Suarez, who, of course, has scored plenty of goals against Chelsea. So.
Yeah, although this season, Barca are not playing that well. You know, they're top of the table.
No, they're not playing well at all.
But they're not playing well at all.
They were poor again. I thought really poor this week. I mean, they hit the woodwork and stuff, and Villarreal are a good time. But Villarreal had, like... 5 starters out, and they still really struggled.
Red card as well, yeah. I mean, again, there's a lot between now and when the first leg of those games is going to be played in February. A lot of things can happen, you know, injuries, form can dip, form can pick as well. You can have new signings, you can have a lot of things. But there's a lot of interesting ties in there. No?
Right, enough of that. How about some quick hits? Chelsea fall again, 1-0 to the power of David Moyes, and Antonio Conte says their title challenge is pretty much over. Alison, would you like to tell me why Conte would come out and say that at this stage, or would you rather celebrate Moyesy, or both?
That's a lot to do in a quick hit, isn't it? So I will say, ooh, what is Conte up to? Honestly, to hear the way he talks, You would think this is a massive surprise that if you've got a midweek Champions League game, you might be a little bit tired in the next league game. And Chelsea did look very jaded. He won't rotate much, though. And it's peculiar. They're over-reliant on Hazard. Hazard does tend to really pick his games, doesn't he? In the Champions League, he always plays well. And I don't think he always chooses the best games to light up in the Premier League.
Arsenal have a horrendous start against Southampton, but then somehow get back into it to grab a point. Julian, we've praised them of late. This is bad Arsenal reappearing, yes?
Yeah, it is, especially defensively. I mean, they hate those early kickoffs, whether it's a Saturday or Sunday, doesn't make any difference. And we saw how bad they were early on in that game. Got to be better after in the second half and everything, but it's still the attitude that I think is not right, and they got lucky to have a point.
Well done, the Saints. Spurs romp all over Stoke City 5-1, and Harry Kane, the four-season wonder, scores two. Now, it's their first Premier League win in over a month. Should they still be thinking in terms of a top-four finish?
Yes, they should. Now, I kind of think that Pochettino might be fibbing. He's now established a narrative that this blip in domestic form by Spurs is probably because...
No,
he doesn't want it to be about the book. He wants it to be about Spurs were overly keen to prove themselves in Europe, and they had a tough group, and playing well against Real Madrid has diverted their attention. So now he's got no more excuses. Free pass till February. They can establish enough points to start threatening.
Crystal Palace draw with Bournemouth 2-2, but I thought they played reasonably well, though it's all overshadowed by Christian Benteke and the incident where he insisted on taking what would have been the game-winning penalty and missed it. So Benteke is now the uber villain. You know, Danny Murphy got all spiky about it on Match of the Day. Roy Hodgson is angry, and Benteke is the Grinch who stole 2 points. Julian, is this reaction fair or slightly over the top?
Maybe
does it make sense for Hodgson to go and throw this guy under the bus? It's not like he's got like five other centre forwards lying around.
Well, yeah, he was honest when he was asked the question, was he supposed to take the penalty? And the answer is no, there's rules. You know, managers make decisions. Someone takes penalties. If Milivojevic takes the penalties, it's because he's very good at it. Clearly better than Benteke, otherwise it would be Benteke. So why do Benteke insist on taking it? If someone is, you know, have been chosen for it, clearly for a reason, not just because his name is hard to say. He was picked because he's good at it.
I don't dispute that. I just wonder if maybe rather than going and crucifying your own player in public, maybe you go and you talk to the players, you figure, you just say, all right, no, that wasn't supposed to happen. We'll deal with it internally. And that's that. And then if you go in the dressing room and you want to get angry and do that weird thing where you start shaking your head and rubbing your hair and the other stuff Hodgson does, that's fine. And if you want to fine Benteke or put him on the naughty step, that's fine. But I'm just not so sure doing it in such a public way. Yeah, you know, yeah, I just wonder if that's something Hodgson might regret. Yeah. Newcastle will make a game of it, but ultimately they fall at home to Leicester City 3-2. Alan Shearer says they have a championship side in the Premier League and that Ashley should either sell or give Alisson, your mate, Rafa Benitez, money to spend in January. Are you on board with that?
Ashley has an asset now that everyone knows is for sale. It's like having your house for sale and not doing any work on it. So you get a really crappy price or no one's interested because there's paint peeling off the walls. But for not too much money, he could... And he's got an excellent, excellent manager and the crowd behind that manager. So you give Rafa the money in January to make sure your asset looks all sparkly and wonderful and is guaranteed Premier League football so that if it takes a long time to get the right deal, you do get the deal eventually. Being stingy in January will not work.
Now, somebody named Kevin Long, props to him. He started centre-back for Burnley against Watford, who, you know, we're all told how brilliant Marco Silva is and Richarlison is so dangerous. And guess what? They still won. They had a bit of a help from, I thought, a rather dubious sending off. But, Julian, Sean Dyche has as many points as Guillaume Balague's god, Mauricio Pochettino. This is absolutely remarkable. If they were going to regress to the mean and be found out, he's doing it with a tiny squad. On top of that, his regulars are injured because, you know, when me goes down and this dude comes in, again, I don't want to be dissing him, but he's Kevin Long. This is incredible.
It is incredible. And I think Dash deserves a lot of credit, a lot of love. that I don't think he gets enough of it because he's doing an amazing job. They got a bit lucky on Saturday. The gods of football. Yeah, gods of football. You know, we're a bit kind to them. Phil Bardsley, more than Kevin Long. Phil Bardsley is still alive and playing football, which is great for him. And had a good game, actually, for Burnley.
We're all glad he's still alive.
Yeah. fantastic. You know, the way they defend, the way they're organised. Not the greatest of football, but it's working and good on them.
Bonus question. If the season were to end today, is Burnley where they are a greater achievement than City where they are in terms of manager of the year?
Yeah, cool. I think everyone would say yeah.
You'd vote Dyche over...
I think everybody in football would.
Over
Pep.
Pep would vote for Dyche over himself.
Yeah, because that's exactly his brand of football.
Gab, one for you. Juventus hosted top of the table Inter on Saturday night. How did they do? It was an ugly nil-nil Italian style of football, wasn't it?
That's exactly what it was. really out of step with what we've seen certainly this season and really last year too. Inter went in, but they were top of the table. They said, "All right, you come and break us down. We're away from home." Inter achieved very little, but Juventus didn't achieve much either. A couple of the better chances. And the frustrating thing, I think, is Max, as I wrote in my excellent column in the game today, Max Allegri made a big deal in the summer about, you know, Juventus needing to go and dominate opponents and his belief that wingers are essential, especially guys who can go one-on-one and create something out of nothing. So they committed like 80 million on two new wingers, Douglas Costa and Federico Bernardeschi. But these guys hardly ever play. And when they do play, they don't play well. And they were both on the bench. They didn't come on. And Paulo Dybala supposedly wasn't 100% fit, but he only came on the last 15 minutes. And yeah, I don't know. If you're serious about this, about wanting to go and really take the game to the opposition and dominate them, you need to play your skilled players and you need to play better. And so I think it's as simple as that.
Hello, I am Paddy Von Bett.
And I'm Charlie Scott.
And together we are The Sweeper, The Times' fantasy football tipping service. You can, of course, sign up for free at thetimes.co.uk/fantasyfootball. We've had a slightly odd game week, I think, in some respects. It was nice to see Harry Kane repay some of our weekly faith with a couple of goals. But he was outshone by a teammate as Son Heung-min was the top scorer across the league in the game week. I say it was strange because, well, we saw Philip Coutinho and Roberto Firmino dropped by Jurgen Klopp after a lot of teams had brought them in. And we saw Chelsea draw a blank as well. We know Eden Hazard's been very popular recently. So too Alvaro Morata. So it was quite tough work out there.
Yeah, but Son, wow. What a performance. Two assists and a goal in that 5-1 win for Spurs against Stoke. And he got 16 points, which, yeah, as Paddy said, led the league. And that's four goals and two assists in his past six game weeks for Tottenham. He looks particularly good at Wembley as well. In his last four games, it's 7 points against Liverpool, 10 points against Palace, 2 points against West Brom, and then 16 against Stoke. But he's not guaranteed minutes. He's such a tough one when it comes to fantasy football. Do you bring him in? But then you might have that devastation of seeing him on the bench, particularly at this festive season with so much rotation. 7.9 million looks cheap, but he's in that kind of Rashford and Martial situation where you just don't know whether he's going to play. Looking forward, Paddy, if you were in fantasy land and had a wild card right now, would you bring him in?
I think it's easier to avoid him just for that reason, especially with the fixture congestion, lots of rotation. Guys like Raheem Sterling and Mahrez are just a little bit more expensive, and for a lot less you can get Richarlison or Jordan Shaqiri, who are sort of the focal points of their team and are a bit more reliable, really. The same goes really for the sort of cheap strikers. We saw three of them this weekend pop up with the goods. Steve Mounier, Dwight Gayle and Jermaine Defoe. You might say that Charlie Austin is the sort of form man in that bracket, but Southampton's games are tricky. And if you're looking for one of those three to pick up on the cheap, I think Steve Mounier is quite a good one at Huddersfield. Club record signing, back from injury, seems to be fully fit again. And if you can get a striker at that sort of value in your squad who can be relied upon to come off the bench when the main guys get dropped, that's invaluable at this time of year.
Absolutely. Well, Mounier, flavour of the month in August, wasn't he? You think flavour of the month in December too?
It could be. In terms of our mini-league, things are heating up. We've now got four teams in the mini-league in the top 1,000 in the world. But individual congratulations goes to Rafi Myers, whose team scored a whopping 93 points this week, which in a tricky week is quite impressive. And that was with Hazard and Morata doing nothing.
Wow.
So congratulations to him. You can, of course, join the Mini League and get the free email every Friday at thetimes.co.uk/fantasyfootball.
And not just every Friday, also Tuesday, because we've got a game week this week, so there will be a sweeper in your inbox tomorrow morning.
Right, that's all we've got time for. Many, many, many thanks to my excellent guest today, Alison Rudd and Julian Lawrence. Now remember, just £8 for an 8-week trial. Just search The Times online, and you don't just get our excellent content from our newspaper that we all work very hard on. You also get that other paper, the Sunday Times. And this season, you can access highlights of every single game in the Premier League, the Champions League, the Europa League, and the FA Cup. We're going to be back next Monday as the big games keep on coming. We'll be looking back on Pep versus Poch, Manchester City versus Spurs.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.